This hearing of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee will now come to order. Today is Tuesday, January 27th, 2026, and the time is 3:30. We are in Butrovich Room 205. Members present are Senator Myers, Senator Klayman, Senator Tobin, Vice Chair Giesel, and myself, Chair Dunbar. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I would like to thank Mary Gwen Kawakami, the Senate Health and Social Services Recording Secretary, and Kyla Tupo from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. We have one item on our agenda today, a presentation from the Department of Family and Community Services. Here to present are Acting Commissioner Tracy Dompling and Assistant Commissioner Marion Sweet, if you guys want to come forward. Present in the room for questions are, actually I'm not sure they're all here, but we've OCS, Office of Children's Services Director Kim Gui, Division of Juvenile Justice Director Matt Davidson, Alaska Psychiatric Institute CEO Ken Cole, Alaska Pioneer Homes Director Dr. Kern McGinley, and Coordinated Health and Complex Care Unit Deputy Director Michaela Vray. There aren't actually that many people in the room, so we're missing a couple of them, but I'm sure we can get them. Looks like we have a couple of them online. We have, Mr. Cole and Mr. Davidson. Mr. Cole is online. Mr. Davidson, we have in the room. Okay, wonderful. We also have Senior Policy Advisor Chrissy Vogely. So thank you all for being here today. Acting Commissioner, please, when you are ready, put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Tracy Dompling, and I'm the Acting Commissioner for the Department of Family and Community Services. I'm both grateful and honored to be serving in this role as Acting Commissioner. I have worked for the department both as a standalone department and under Health and Social Services for almost 27 years. I worked for the Department of Health as the director for the Division of Behavioral Health for 2 years before coming back to the department as the deputy commissioner. And then I have been in this acting role now for about 4 weeks. I think, Mr. Chair, you pretty much went through the introductions, but we do have Assistant Commissioner Marion Sweet and Senior Policy Advisor Chrissy Vogely, all the division directors, and a deputy director from Complex Care Unit are all on the phone. We appreciate the opportunity to present to you today. Right. The mission of the department is to provide support, safety, and personal well-being for vulnerable Alaskans. We have four direct service divisions that form the foundation of our department. That is the Alaska Pioneer Homes, Alaska Psychiatric Institute, the Division of Juvenile Justice, and the Office of Children's Services. And as I report out on each division here coming up in the next few slides, just know that I'll be providing accomplishments and updates from the last hearing later on about slide 12. And as we get started today, I just want to take a moment to recognize the staff of our department. They work with some of Alaska's most vulnerable populations, doing so with care and compassion. Our department's divisions provide 24/7 services, regardless of challenging weather or other conditions that people are allowed to work from home for. And we would not be able to effectively operate our facilities or our services without the dedication of our staff. And for them, I'm incredibly grateful. Slide 3 is a high-level organizational chart for the department, both for the commissioner's office and for individual divisions. The chart reflects key positions within the organization to help meet our mission and vision. This year, we welcomed a new director to the Alaska Pioneer Homes in June of 2025. That was Dr. Kern McGinley. And Dr. McGinley comes to us from the Anchorage School District. And although his background isn't in assisted living, he's been able to translate his leadership experience well to the Pioneer Home. The Pioneer Homes provide services to elder Alaskans, including assistance with activities of daily living, nursing services, recreational and social programs, assistance with medications, dietary needs, housekeeping, and meal preparation. Most of our homes have an occupancy rate above 90%. However, the Fairbanks Pioneer Home is currently keeping rooms vacant due to direct care staff shortage and resident room flooring enhancements. Our homes provide a wide range of services and activities for the most independent individuals to those living with dementia-related diseases and advanced complex care needs. Last year, we had reported that 58% of our residents in the Pioneer Home had dementia-related diseases. This year, that number has increased to 62%, so we are seeing a gradual increase there. Alaska Pioneer Homes have over 400 full-time positions and a budget of just over $117 million.
I'll pause for a second. Thank you, Commissioner. If folks have questions as we go, we have one from Senator Tobin. I also want to note Dr. McGinley, not just from the school district, but was the principal of King Tech High School in the heart of my district. I visited him a number of times. He did a great job there. So great hire, in my opinion. Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome. I almost said Director Dompling, and then I thought, nope, wrong title. I'm really excited for you to be here, and I do have some questions as I had the opportunity this summer to visit my uncle who is in the Fairbanks home. And I was able to visit multiple times, and each time he would point to the wing that was closed. He also would mention that he's been having a lot of turnover with some of his caretakers and the folks in the facility, which caused a lot of disruption, I think, for some of his holiday plans and just his own quality of life. So we all know that there's a lot of issues and a lot of problems, and I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about what is your vision or plan, or what are you hoping that you and the director will be able to do over the next coming months to help stabilize this ship and then get us in a better position than when we are right now.
Sure. Through the chair to Senator Tobin. Some of the things I hear what you're saying about the Fairbanks home. I've been up there. I've seen the unit that's closed. We do have a number of vacancies for our certified nursing assistants as well. We are having to bring in traveling CNAs, which is part of why you're seeing those caretakers turnover. I don't want to spoil coming up in my slide, but Director McGinley, he has done a great job because he is very focused on education, and we have an exciting apprenticeship program, a CNA to LPN program that I was going to talk about a little bit later.
All right, thank you. Any other questions, Senator Klayman?
I actually appreciate the historical perspective on the six Pioneer Homes of when they were started. Can you go through the six and let me know approximate population in the six?
Well, through the chair to Senator Klayman, do we? Okay. I'm going to pull out my glasses.
I can do math enough to know that 506 is less than all those years added together.
Right. All right. The Anchorage Pioneer Home has a census of 162 individuals with a capacity of 177. Today they were, or last week, sorry, they were at almost 92% capacity. The Alaska Veterans Pioneer Home in Palmer has 73 residents with 79 capacity, so they're at 92%. The Fairbanks Pioneer Home has a census of 58 with a capacity of 91. They're at 63, almost 64%. The Juneau Pioneer Home has a census of 47 and capacity of 49, so they are kind of the top winner. Well, close there at 96%. The Ketchikan Pioneer Home has 42 residents and a capacity of 45. And then the Sitka Pioneer Home has 63 residents and a capacity of 65.
So as to those capacities, is that fairly typical that if not counting Fairbanks because of others issues going on in Fairbanks, but in Fairbanks, is that generally you're trying to run 92, 95, 96% full?
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, yes, we would love to be at 100% capacity. There is certainly the room turnover when there is a vacancy. And, I think it's been told to me, too, that it's not really easy for staff that have developed relationships with the residents and someone passes. It's very hard just to go in there and, spiff up the room, pack up the belongings, and be ready to put somebody new in the next day. But we also have to be able to give individuals a heads up when they're on the wait list next. Are they wanting to come into this particular home? So, yes, it would be our goal to be up, at least for me and talking to Director McGinley, up above 95%. The Veterans Pioneer Home also has its challenges because we do have a specific requirement, because it is a Veterans Pioneer Home, to have a certain number of residents who are veterans. So we need to offer them an opportunity to come into the home first. Then we need to go to the wait list. They're currently having some challenges just with rooms that are female, and maybe they need a male. So it's very difficult because it's not comfortable for people, obviously, to have a male on one side and a female on the other that are sharing a bathroom space.
Yes, go ahead, Sarah.
I would just say, I think you all are doing great. The numbers you're reporting, I know Fairbanks has some additional challenges, but the other five facilities, I think the capacity and the number of residents in terms of capacity shows you're doing really good work. I have no criticism of those numbers.
Thank you, Senator Klayman. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you mentioned the issues in Fairbanks are primarily around staffing, it sounds like. Looking forward, you know, we're all hearing that, you know, the population of Alaska is getting older. I'm assuming we're going to be looking at more people wanting your services over the years, and you've already got a wait list. Is staffing the primary thing stopping you from upping your capacity, or is it facilities or something else?
Through the chair to Senator Myers, I believe primarily it is staffing. We did have the flooring. There was the flooring upgrade that was going on in some of the throughout the home. And so we had to be able to have residents move. And that might have been, Senator Tobin, kind of what your father was talking about, too, of having to change location and be a little bit disrupted. But the new floors in the homes are beautiful and they were much needed.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, I didn't just mean for Fairbanks. I meant for the system as a whole. Is what other challenges are we looking at if we're going to potentially increase capacity?
And through the chair to Senator Myers, it's primarily staffing. As I said, we'll talk a little bit more about that apprentice program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Giesel.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. My mother lived in the Anchorage Pioneer Home for 9 years. The staff is nearly... certainly more than 90% Filipino individuals, nursing assistants. So I do wonder what our immigration policies are these days that would affect that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. We do have the director online now, Dr. Kern McGinley, if folks have questions for him. But I think at this point we'll go on to the next slide, Director. I'm sorry, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's hard for me too, just so you know. I'm glad I got the title correct when I made my introduction. This year we also welcomed Mr. Ken Cole. He is the new Chief Executive Officer with Alaska Psychiatric Institute. He has significant experience in psychiatric hospitals across the country, and he walked in with a vision of a more efficient and patient-centered hospital. Alaska Psychiatric Institute, or API, is Alaska's only state-run hospital that provides acute psychiatric care to individuals experiencing mental health crises. There's 5 inpatient units with 80 beds available to provide compassionate health care to support Alaskans. API is also the only organization in the state that provides competency restoration services for individuals where the court is concerned about their competency to stand trial. And in 2025, just for some numbers, API provided restoration services to 75 individuals, and those individuals had an average length of stay for that program of 73 days. And API has 321 full-time positions and a budget of almost $67 million.
Very good. Questions? Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Cole's predecessor invited me to tour API, which I was able to do, and it was an interesting and fascinating experience, particularly as I think folks may not know that there are facilities for court proceedings, and there's also the Chilcat unit for youth. The few things that we did talk about, one is capacity, and I'm curious because we see 80 licensed beds here, but we know that that capacity has been substantially higher in the past. And so I'm curious about your vision of increasing that bed capacity so we can continue to provide Alaskans care. And I'm also very curious, as when I visited, we had conversations about the Chilcat unit, and if you can talk a little bit about your vision also for that particular facility.
Sure. Through the chair to Senator Tobin. The goal really, I am also coming up, going to talk about the jail-based restoration program, which has also taken a little bit of pressure off for the competency work at API. And we've also, CEO Cole and I have talked about, is there other space that we could be looking at within the community to try to have either satellite API? There's a lot of things that come into play with that. There's, you know, CMS requirements, there's joint commission requirements, but those are the kind of things that we've been trying to think outside the box because we're pretty limited with the space we have there at API. So what do we have as potential to be able to offer more services to Alaskans when they need it?
Well,
yes, sorry.
And then just touching on the Chilcat unit.
Sure. Through the chair to Senator Tobin. Chilkat unit, surprisingly, here in the last few months has had openings. There really was a period of time where there was a significant backlog. When I was there a few months ago, there was, I think, only three or four youth that were there. But that is definitely another pressure point. And, you know, we've, again, have reached out to somebody in the community to talk about whether or not, you know, there's space there that, you know, could we move the Chilkat unit to another area that's still close to API so that we can utilize the psychiatric support and other staff to be able to, you know, to provide the services to those individuals.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So about, I think it's probably been 8 years ago now, there was concern about what was going on at API, and changes were made in the board that was governing the institute. Have things settled? Is it more stabilized now? What can you tell us?
Through the chair to Vice Chair Giesel. Yes, it has settled quite a bit. The culture, from what I've seen and heard of the staff there, has calmed. I think the same thing with the residents. There's a really strong leadership team that's at API. When CEO Cole came in, he had talked to me about really wanting to build that leadership team and strengthen the leadership team. We actually had the Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association that provided some funding actually to provide pretty lengthy and intense leadership training to the staff. So I think we've got some great staff and leadership positions. We are building upon that. We are working with and having, you know, listening sessions with staff. I know Mr. Cole's been out there or over there a few times, just listening if people want to come in and talk. And so there's a lot more transparency that's happening too, which I think that helps to kind of settle some of the concerns with staff that we've seen in the past. So I really do feel like we are, you know, we are moving in the right direction with API.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator Klayman.
The Chilkat unit is the youth unit?
Yes.
Okay. And then kind of similar to the last question, how many beds in the different units? My memory is that the forensic unit has 10 beds, but I don't want to think I know the answer. I should get the answer from you.
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, I want to make sure that I have the answer too, but at least for the Chilkat unit, there's 10. I believe for the forensic, there is also 10, and then there's remaining for the civil, but
60.
Yes, 60 for the civil. Yes.
And follow up?
Yes.
Not in the forensic unit or in the youth unit, but what's the typical length of stay for the adult civil unit, if you know?
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, I don't know at the moment, but we can find out that information, because one of the things, and of course I'll speak to it a little bit later too, is that under CEO Cole's leadership, he has really strengthened the data to be able to review, and so we can very simply get that information for you.
Okay, thank you.
We have Director Cole on the, or CEO Cole on the line. Would you like to direct your question to him or take the answer off?
If he knows the answer, better now than later.
Mr. Cole, are you there?
CEO of Ken Cole, CEO API through the chair.
Go ahead.
Yes. Yes, I don't have in front of me the average length of stay for just the civil patients, but we'll get that number and get it back to you right away.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Cole. Okay, are there any further questions for API? All right. Please continue, Commissioner.
All right. Moving on to Division of Juvenile Justice, a division which I have some familiarity. DJJ has 6 youth facilities providing either short-term detention services or both detention and secure treatment services. We have Johnson Youth Center in Juneau, McLaughlin Youth Center in Anchorage, the Fairbanks Youth Facility, and the Bethel Youth Facility, who both have detention and secure treatment units. And then we have the Matsu Youth Facility in Palmer and the Kenai Peninsula Youth Facility that only provide the short-term detention services. There's 13 probation offices that are located in both urban and rural communities throughout Alaska, such as Anchorage, Fairbanks, Nome, Bethel, Juneau, Dillingham, Ukiavik. DJJ provides specialized treatment services to address the needs of individual youth, including treatment programs that are focused on substance use, neurobehavioral conditions, sexual offenses, violent offenders, and gender-specific programming for females. And DJJ has over 400 full-time positions and a budget of almost $73 million.
Very good. I have a question if other folks don't. We'll start with you, Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is one that you may have to follow up with me on. I'm very curious, as the facilities that you named doesn't name Nome, which closed, I believe, my first year here working in the legislature. And I am very curious to know about the recidivism rate, particularly from students and young people from that particular region. And particularly my curiosity, as I have anecdotal evidence, is that they're actually reoffending at higher rates and that they are staying for longer because they are not surrounded by their family and the folks that they care for them. And I'm very curious just to see if that anecdotal evidence plays out actually in the data, in fact.
Through the chair to Senator Tobin, that's correct. We'll have to get you that information.
So my question, thank you, Commissioner. My question is specific to McLaughlin, and I don't know if Mr. Director Davidson might be able to answer it. Let's see here. It says Juno, but is he actually on the phone from Juno? Is he isn't on the phone, okay. So he's in Juneau, but he's on the phone. Director Davidson, can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Wonderful. So I had the opportunity to take a tour of McLaughlin. I think it was 2 years ago, or MYC as folks call it now. And there was an issue, a planned for or hoped for capital improvement having to do with the courtroom area and sort of the initial place that a lot of youth came into the facility and then were, I'm not sure if it was arraigned or what the appropriate term is, but sort of an initial courtroom area. And then they would be taken down this long hallway to the main area. And it was sort of a, if you went there, it wasn't a very pleasant place. And there was some hope that it would be improved. And so I guess my question is, I haven't had a chance to go there in a little while. Has it been improved? And if not, are there plans, or does the governor have, you know, in his budget any plans to fund an improvement there?
Yes, thank you. For the record, this is Matt Davidson. I'm the director of the Division of Juvenile Justice. Joining you from Juneau, just at my office. Thanks for the opportunity. Mr. Chairman, the good news is that we were this past legislative session, we were able to reappropriate money from another project to the renovation of the detention court unit, and the planning is just about underway for that renovation. So we are pending any upgrades to that space that you visited, and that staff are really excited to get refreshed. So the good news is we're moving in that direction. We just haven't been able to start that yet. So we're moving in that direction.
Thank you. Is there any thought of, will those improvements be done in, you know, a year, 2 years? What's the sort of projected completion date?
Mr. Chairman, I think I'd be out of my depth to speak to the length of time. I will say that the project is tied to money that we've been appropriated through the Facilities Council for a roof refresh of those same areas. And so I think it's going to be a couple-year project.
Very good. Well, I'm still very glad to hear that it has funding and is going forward. If folks get a chance from Anchorage, at least, to go to McLaughlin or MYC, it's a much larger facility than you might think. It's many acres very close to the university and the hospital. We're having an issue with the screen here, but shouldn't impact your presentation at all. Please continue, Commissioner. Unless there are there any other questions for DJJ? Okay. Please continue, Commissioner.
The Office of Children's Services, otherwise known as OCS, is the department's child welfare agency, which is responsible for ensuring the safety of Alaska's children, investigating reports of child abuse and neglect, and administering the foster care system. OCS provides service delivery across 5 regions with 21 state offices. Main offices are located in Anchorage, Wasilla, Bethel, Fairbanks, and Juneau, while smaller offices and hub towns are in areas such as Kenai, St. Mary's, Ukiavik, and Sitka. OCS reports child welfare data on its website, such as the number of children in care, the protective service reports received and investigated, and the number of licensed foster homes and other care facilities. And OCS has over 600 full-time positions with a budget of over $221 million.
questions for OCS. This is usually a hot topic. Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying not to be the first one on the mic each time. Obviously, there's been dynamics around OCS in the news, obviously, with also some legal action. I was just rereading the 2024 audit, which has some glaring determinations about some failure to implement particular legislation. I'm going to ask a very specific question, as I know that we're probably going to have a lot more opportunity to sit and talk about what is your vision and what are you hoping to do within this particular agency. I see here on the slide, it says partnering with tribes. And one of the most incredible programs that I know of in that partnership was called Knowing Who You Are, which was produced by the Casey Family Foundation. And it was offered in multiple settings. I actually was able to partner with OCS officers in Nome, as I needed somebody who could provide a different perspective to the potential foster families that were taking the program. And I have known the program has actually not been offered for the last 4 years. So I'm curious about some of these best practices that seem to have been put to the wayside over the last 3 to 4 years. And curious to hear if you have an interest in bringing these back, or what is some of the thoughts you have about some of those really high quality programmings that did strengthen a family's ability to serve the young kids in their care.
Through the chair to Senator Tobin, I can get started and then Director Guay can potentially add more information. I too have taken Knowing Who You Are. It's very impactful training. I don't know if or why we're not providing that anymore. Again, I think Director Guay can speak to that a little bit further. As far as some of the areas that are important, you know, to me, I've talked with Director Guay about this, but, you know, really looking at that length of time for permanency, wanting to make sure that our engagement with families is increased. We know that's an area that needs improvement, and also making sure that we're having those routine engagements and contact with kids that are in out-of-home placement, so that we can, you know, ensure everyone's safety. The Office of Children's Services was working on an initiative that was called Back to Basics, that was really kind of focused in on, again, those basic services that were needed. Some of that initiative wasn't necessarily moving the mark. So we met about that a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about, you know, that it's never, I feel like it's never a bad thing to say this isn't working. What I think is a bad thing is when you continue to do the same thing and get the same outcome. So that's where we're at, is kind of a going back to the drawing board. And I've talked about where my priorities are that I just talked about. You know, asked Director Guay to work with leadership to come back to our department leadership to be able to give some new initiatives that we can work on, because I think she would agree with me that those are areas for improvement. But if you'd like to ask Director Guay too.
Director Guay, did you hear Senator Tobin's question?
Yes, on the record, this is Kim Guay, the Director of Office of Children's Services. Through the chair, Senator Tobin, thank you for your question. Knowing Who You Are was shelved by Casey Families a few years ago, and Elastic took it up and tried to figure out a way to implement that within our own training system. And there were some internal dialogues about how we could morph this training. It really it was not meeting the mark as far as what we were hoping to achieve. With some of our staff, right? So this is OCS staff that typically were attending, and it was about OCS's, as a staff member of OCS, what do you bring to the table as far as your own identity? How do you work with youth? How do you, you know, look at your own bias through the lens of diversity, equity, and inclusion? And so what we did is we adopted a new model. It's a little different than Knowing Who You Are, which was around a 2-day in-person training. What we wanted to do is we wanted to build a foundation and then build upon that. So a lot of times people go into a 2-day training, they can't absorb all of that information. So we started with, 4 hours here, and then a few months later, we added a day here. So we're trying to build upon people's understanding of their own bias, what they bring to the table, how to partner with people. We have been working with our tribes on this. In addition, we have launched the Alaska Blanket Exercise, which is very powerful. And so we do that with all of our staff as well. So we have a pretty robust training program. I would say with anything, though, we're always looking at ways to improve it, looking at what people are offering as far as suggestions and what's currently out there. So that's my short answer.
Thank you. Senator Tobin, do you have a follow-up?
Just a brief follow-up. Mr. Chairman, if we could have at some point a Alaska Children's Caucus or potentially here in the Senate Health and Social Services opportunity just kind of hear a little bit more about the work that you're doing with parents and with tribes to really build that collective understanding of how do we ensure that the children who are placed in our care are developing as whole people, as future citizens, and the work that we are doing to ensure that the parents and the community members who may have those young people placed in their homes are giving all the tools that they need to be successful.
Thank you, Senator Oman. I have a question for you, Director Gui, actually two questions. I had a great meeting over the interim with I'm going to forget the name here, but a youth council at Covenant House. Formerly homeless youth action committee had names of that nature. And they had some really great, very specific requests. Not all of them applied to OCS, of course. Many of them had to do with sort of broader Department of Public Assistance and that kind of thing. Because my first question is, have you been able to interact with that group? And the second, one of the specific issues that they raised to me, and again, this is more broader for the whole government rather than just OCS, but they were concerned, as are many of our residents, about forms being accessible digitally versus in paper. And you know, they're young people, so they're sort of baffled that in some cases they have to use paper forms. Of course, with OCS, you might have guardians involved, but has there been an effort to digitize things? And then again, have you had the opportunity to interact with that group? And I apologize that I don't remember the exact name.
Thank you for your questions, Chair Dunbar. I'm not quite sure the name of the group. We do a lot of collaboration. That's one of the things I'm very proud of at OCS is we partner quite a bit with lived experience. We have recently been standing up a parents advisory committee. We have Facing Foster Care in Alaska. We also have a Resource Family Advisory Board. And we put out surveys to our tribes. We work very closely with our tribal partners. I'm not recalling which, we work a lot with Covenant House. We actually had a meeting with them yesterday, so I'm not quite sure which group. So if you can get more information about which one, I'd be happy to elaborate more on that. As far as technology needs, yes. That this is an issue for us for sure, trying to figure out how to be mobile with our youth and with our families. And so that is one of the things that we are interested and have been interested in trying to become more modernized. It's going to take some funding and something that we need to do here at OCS.
Thank you. And yes, I'll certainly get you that name of that group. I have one other question, and then do we have a question, Senator Meyer? This might be stepping on the commissioner's presentation later on, but last year, and I'm sure in years past, I remember either you or the commissioner stressing the shortage of foster families, the difficulty recruiting foster families, and I'm wondering if any progress was made over this interim.
Chair Dunbar, thank you for the question. I don't know the number of current foster homes. What I can tell you is we have really been prioritizing relative and kin placements, and we have seen an increase in the number of placements with relative and kin providers. We are also doing quite a bit as far as recruitment events for foster homes and trying to get the word out about bringing foster homes to the table. And so I know that is an active work that we are continuing to do, but I can get the number of current foster homes compared to last year.
Very good. Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Klayman.
Another topic that frequently comes about OCS's retention and recruitment. I know you've got more positions in Office of Children's Services than any other portion in the department. How are things going on retention and recruitment?
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, I am going to speak to that later, but I so
you can,
there
you can wait. Okay. That's,
I'm going to speak to it later. Yes,
that's fine.
Very good. Okay, thank you, Director Guay. We will go on to the next slide, then, Commissioner.
All right. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Marion Sweet. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Family and Community Services. So the mission of Departmental Support Services is to provide quality administrative services to support the department's mission. Departmental Support Services encompasses all of the behind-the-scenes operations of our organization to help it run smoothly. The services that we provide are oversight and guidance to our direct service divisions, and it starts in the commissioner's office with leadership. It's expanded through our public outreach from our public information team, and it covers all administrative functions, whether that be budget or finance, IT, HR, or even our management of our facility projects. Our goal is to maintain and strengthen the services that we provide and deliver to Alaskans. DSS has 90 full-time positions and a budget of $42.3 million.
Any questions? Not seeing any. Thank you.
On our next slide, I'm going to discuss the coordinated health and complex care units. The Department of Family and Community Services established our coordinated health and complex care unit to oversee complex cases that were involving individuals within DFCS custody or for those that were in imminent risk of becoming in our custody. This unit works very proactively to identify barriers in the Alaska care system and collaborates with the Department of Health on policies and processes so that we can improve the outcomes and ensure better outcomes for Alaskans with complex needs. The data that you see on this screen is it's a snapshot in time. And it represents the cases that our complex care team has worked on. The data is specific to quarter two of this state fiscal year. However, we do have data that goes back to state fiscal year 2024. And since its inception, the team has worked on 150 unique cases within the state. Additionally, we also have data that shows the most common diagnoses within the state, and they are listed in order of the highest occurrences. And you can see inside of the graph that there are definitely a lot more diagnoses that we see inside of our youth population than we do within our adults. And then our coordinated health and complex care unit is a small but mighty team of six, and it is led by Deputy Director Michaela Verrey.
Any questions on this slide? Right. Not seeing any. Thank you.
Okay. So the fundamental value that is guiding the department is a vision of service first. And what that means is that every decision, every action, and every partnership that we have is rooted around the center or rooted around putting Alaskans first. And we do that, and our vision is succeeded by what you see on the board. This was the first week of us being a brand new department. We got together as leaders, and we developed SPAM, which is Strengthening Lives, through meaningful connections with families, communities, tribes, and providers, providing safe, person-centered care with integrity and dignity to Alaskans we serve, advancing an agency culture that prioritizes the well-being of our workforce, and mobilizing innovative solutions to complex challenges. I'm happy about building SPAM and the work that we do for Alaskans.
I appreciate that you could have gone with MAPS, but you stayed committed to the SPAM. Very good.
All right, I'll move on. I do want to take just a minute to give some updates on some of our department initiatives. Some of this we already touched on a little bit, but I'm going to go ahead anyway. Some of the renovations that we're doing within our homes and facilities, we talked a little bit about the Palmer Pioneer Home. We are very nearly completed with the roof replacement of our veterans' home there, and the majority of the funding actually has been awarded to us from a grant with the Veterans Administration. Yeah. We talked a little bit about the Fairbanks Pioneer Home flooring project. That, too, is nearly complete. We are grateful that is going to be done, and we will be able to actually open up that wing again for our elders in our care. The Wasilla Field Office is currently undergoing an expansion, and it's almost nearly complete as well, to help us better serve children and families within inside of that region. And then a DJJ. We are in the planning phases for our McLaughlin remodel for the DCU, or the detention and court unit. And then we are also doing remodels at our Fairbanks youth facility. So a lot of work that are going on within our facilities at DJJ and our Pioneer Homes. Some of the technology improvements that we have done, so the department is implemented using SmartSheet. And so SmartSheet, I'm going to read this part really quick, is a cloud-based work management and collaboration tool designed to help teams plan, track, automate, and report on projects. Basically, we're using this for a number of different things. One of them I'm really excited about is that we're using it to track our facility projects so that we can have transparency about where we are in the process, not only to our divisions, but to leadership so that they understand where we are with these things. And so it'll just have all the information about where we are, if we're in the design phase or if we're in construction and we have an estimated completion date so that we can reopen the facilities. We're working on a budget projection and a spend plan tool, and then we're also using it for our department strategic planning. We have also expanded the use of ImageSource, which is a system that we were using for a number of other things. Our implementation we have increased our implementation to an online tracking system for our Title 47 patients. These are those that are in involuntary commitments, and this allows us to have better tracking of all of the patients that are around the state. I'm sorry, my mic keeps cutting out. Can you hear me okay?
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And then additionally, we have created an online application for our mental health treatment assistance program. This is for designated facilities, and we provide reimbursement when they provide mental health treatment to individuals that are in involuntary commitments. And then finally, we are working on, from an IT standpoint, Wi-Fi enhancements at all of our Pioneer homes to help support our NTREC system. And our NTREC system is a comprehensive senior care system and wellness system that uses sensors and real-time data to help track the safety of our residents and increase our staff responsiveness. It's a really enhanced nurse call system. All right. We are continuing our emphasis on workforce well-being across our entire department. DJJ maintains an employee-led wellness committee that sponsors statewide morale events. API has an active employee committee that hosts several staffing events year-round. And additionally, because of API and what they deal with, they have created a critical stress management team. It's a team of four peers within the hospital that help provide support to colleagues during critical incidents. At each of our Pioneer homes, there is a focus on well-being by monitoring staff to prevent burnout and ensure that we're providing care to our elders. And staff are celebrated throughout the year for service excellence. And to piggyback on what Commissioner Dompling was discussing, there's also ongoing training to help increase the high quality of care that we provide to our residents within the homes. And OCS prioritizes workforce wellness through their wellness and resiliency officer, who is doing audits of all of our facilities to help provide improvements across all of our OCS offices. The talent acquisition team is a team within Departmental Support Services that was developed to create an unbiased hiring standard hiring practice that builds efficiencies and focuses on the candidate experience. We are still in the pilot phase with just OCS and with Departmental Support Services going through that. And in calendar year 2025, we actually had 391 candidates that we interviewed and hired 105 new DFCS staff members. So it's pretty exciting. And then, of course, we're continuing with our cross-agency collaborations with the Department of Health. We worked with them on the Behavioral Health Roadmap, as well as the Alaska Integrated Comprehensive Plan, or the COMP Plan. And, in fact, the COMP Plan is integral in how we have developed our strategic plan that we're working on for the next several years. And then we are also continuing our collaboration with the Department of Correction on our competency restoration program, our jail-based competency restoration program.
We have a question from Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm curious, as I am always, my ears always perk up when I think about technological improvements and talent acquisition and the introduction of AI, and if the department has or has any plans to use any sort of artificial intelligence in screening applications or in any of your hiring processes, if that is something that has been discussed or is considered.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, that's very intriguing as far as how we could use that for hiring practices. You've piqued a curiosity of mine. It's not something that we've actually talked about. There are definitely other things that the department and state agencies are using AI for, and I know that there's some interest within the department for data mining tools for our existing systems to be able to use AI to go into our existing systems to quickly find information, the number of kids that we have that have eating disorders, or the number of times that a specific individual was listed in a case note. So we've been having conversations from that aspect, but as far as the HR, that's very intriguing to me.
Thank you.
Okay. For the record, Tracy Dompling, Acting Commissioner for the Department. On slide 12, we want to highlight some of our accomplishments from 2025. The Alaska Pioneer Homes launched a new online application to replace an old, outdated paper process, which has improved access for seniors and families and also increased residential enrollment. Today, we had 7,462 individuals that were on the wait list compared to just a little over 7,000 just 6 months ago. So we're pretty pleased with that, and, of course, that improving those technology opportunities. While the Office of Children's Services continues to see high number of youth in out-of-home care, these numbers are decreasing. In 2021, there were 2,923 children in out-of-home care. And in 2025, there was a safe reduction to 2,363 children in out-of-home care. We've also seen family reunifications that are rising. In 2025, 60% of the cases that closed were due to family reunification. That's up from 55% in 2024 and 51% in 2022. So we're making small incremental changes, but it is also here, OCS has seen a 5% increase in family reunifications for Alaska Native children in the last year. So that went from 53% in 2024 to 58% in 2025.
Can I pause you there for a second, Commissioner? Maybe you're about to say this, so I apologize. But for you or for Director Guay, to what do you attribute that improvement? Was there a change in policy? Is it just sort of statistical noise? This thing goes up and down? Why do you think it improved?
To the chair, I will let Director Guay speak to that since she was in her position at OCS during that time frame.
This is Kim Guay. For the record, this is Kim Guay, Office of Children's Services Director. I believe that was Chair Dunbar that asked that question.
Yes.
I think it's a multitude of initiatives that we've been doing and partnerships. I will say for one, I can't credit the tribes enough for the amount of collaboration in working with us and working with the families. I think that definitely contributes to the higher number of reunifications.
We also have been really trying to increase our training and understanding of families. We, as I mentioned, we have a lived experience committee at this point for parents. So I think there's a multitude of different initiatives that we are tracking and looking at. We also, of course, are making sure there's not reentry, right? So when you're looking at reification, you also need to make sure that the children aren't then reentering, you know, 6 months later or a year later. So we are tracking that data to ensure that it is a good number. And so far it is. I will say the one caveat to this is compared to the nation, we do keep kids in care a little bit longer. And I will say primarily because we do have a disproportionate number of Alaska Native children in care, and by law, the Indian Child Welfare Act, there's active efforts and reasonable efforts, findings in court. And those do require, there's a higher burden, as there should be. And so with that, we do have kids that stay in care longer. So it does provide the parents a little bit more time to work on changes of behavior.
Any follow-up questions from the committee? I don't see any. Thank you, Director. Thank you, Commissioner, if you could please continue.
Yes, moving on to juvenile justice. Youth transitioning out of DJJ facilities now have Medicaid activated and are automatically eligible for Medicaid support services 30 days prior and 30 days post-release from facilities. This allows youth to become better connected with medical, behavioral, and dental providers in their home communities prior to release. There's also some screening and assessments that are being conducted via telehealth prior to release. We're also happy that we've seen some staffing improvements. In FY24, DJJ had a 14.9% vacancy rate overall for all of its positions, compared to 11.4% in fiscal year 25. In fiscal year 24, there was a 21% vacancy rate that was specific to the frontline facility staff, and then that's compared to 14% in 2025. So some of that improvement we feel like can be attributed. There was an increase in base pay that happened around July 31st of 2023. And the vacancy rate for all of the juvenile justice counselor positions decreased from 21% the month prior to that pay increase to 11% vacancy a year and a half later. So we feel like that definitely contributed. Fairbanks Youth Facility is also a highlight with staffing. In fiscal year 24, they had a almost 52% vacancy for their frontline facility staff. That equated to about 14 out of 27 positions being vacant. And then in fiscal year 25, they were down to 22% vacancy of those frontline staff, equating to 6 of 27 positions being vacant. API and Department of Corrections partnered to provide competency restoration for individuals who reside within a Department of Corrections facility instead of them having to wait for an available bed at API. So the Department of Corrections provides the space and the security staff for up to 10 male participants at the Anchorage Correctional Complex and up to 10 female participants at the Highland Mountain Correctional Center. API staff provide the mental health treatment and restoration education, such as, you know, how a criminal trial works inside the Department of Corrections facilities. So talk a little bit more about competency. If restoration to competency is not successful, these patients are typically placed under a civil commitment order, and oftentimes we refer to these patients as conversion patients. They continue to reside at API and receive the same care and treatment as other patients. But API has found some success in utilizing conditional release into the community for some conversion patients. So they are being released typically to assisted living homes that are providing additional support and supervision. There's currently We do go to the court for approval for those people that we feel it's appropriate to ask for that release. There's 9 conditional release patients currently in the Anchorage area. Patients need to comply with specific conditions of release, and if they don't, they are returned to API for noncompliance. And then in an effort to support community resources, each of those conditional release patients also has a monthly outpatient clinic appointment at API. So those are some of the ways, too, that we are trying to take some of that pressure off those beds that are really holding up the wait list at API. And then just lastly, this new year, developed under the leadership of CEO Cole. I think I talked a little bit about it earlier, but API hosts a dashboard on his website. So reports the civil and forensic wait lists, along with other indicators such as census, seclusion and restraint, and average length of stay. And I think that again, has been important in the transparency, really not only to the staff, but also to the public of the services that we're providing.
Thank you.
Okay. Slide 13, want to highlight some of our areas of focus as we continue into 2026. Complex care unit, in collaboration with the Department of Health, is continuing its work to expand community-based placements so that we can find a wider range of treatment opportunities and reduce placements in institutions. The development of the complex care residential home license is essential for expanding the number of those community-based placements for individuals with complex needs. This unit will assist in the development of these homes with specializations to support the populations for the individuals that are in care of the department. Through the Complex Care Committee, the unit will also focus on advancing complex care system reform, doing that also with the Department of Health. Complex Care Unit is identifying a small number of high impact projects so that we can lay the groundwork of some meaningful change that includes regulatory reform and also a mechanism for sustainable funding, because that is really the key. You know, you can start a pilot, but there needs to be that sustainable funding to be able to keep the resource moving forward. Alaska Pioneer Homes. I talked a little bit about it earlier, but the CNA to LPN apprentice program, it aims to address the CNA shortages and retention across the Pioneer Homes. This is a partnership with the Department of Labor and the Alaska Vocational and Technical Center. The Alaska Board of Nursing has approved the CNA to LPN apprenticeship program. And there's also grant funding from the Department of Labor for development and instruction. The Pioneer Homes and the Alaska Vocational Technical Center are creating the curriculum for this program, which will have to go before the Accredited Commission for Education and Nursing and the Alaska Board of Nursing for approval before they can launch the program. But this is definitely a way that they have looked at kind of that grow your own opportunity to really look at addressing some of those staffing issues in the homes.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. That's very intriguing. And I think my ears perked up as this committee also has the purview of overseeing the Rural Health Transformation Fund. And so I'm curious to know if this will be able to access some of those dollars or if there's been discussion, as I understand one of the lines in the particular state application was about workforce development.
Through the chair to Senator Tobin, yes, we have been looking as a department at opportunities just really in all of those focus areas that the Department of Health has identified. And we are looking at those again at the department level to really prioritize what we want to move forward for potential funding.
Good question. And we will begin our hearings on that fund on Thursday. And I expect that to be a major focus of this committee, the whole session.
Pioneer Homes, this upcoming year, will lead a health and wellness initiative by collaborating with medical professionals, behavioral health experts, and other stakeholders to support elders that are struggling with substance use and also other behavioral health needs that you see and that are associated with an aging population. Pioneer Homes will develop a network of dementia-informed clinical counselors to support families and caregivers and staff in managing emotional, relational, and behavioral challenges with residents. In partnership with Department of Corrections, API will be exploring the feasibility of expanding the jail-based restoration program. I know that they would like to try to see a capacity increase from 10 to 24 individuals to better meet system needs. But again, that's a strong partnership that we have with the Department of Corrections to see if we can expand that program. API is also onboarding a new electronic health records platform this year, which will connect with the Health Information Exchange and also lead to better care outcomes for this population within the state.
Can I pause you there for a second? I guess this is a question for Mr. Cole. Onboarding a new electronic health record system, that's great. It also, you know, we've all had sort of nightmares at every level of government with upgrading these kind of systems. They end up costing much more than we expect and sometimes being delayed. Is there any Can you give me an update on this system? How much is it going to cost? Are we sure that's how much it's going to cost?
Does he know? Do you want to speak to that?
Mr. Chair, yes, this is Ken Cole, CEO of the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. I'll have to defer the cost question to Ms. Sweet, Assistant Commissioner. She should be able to answer that question. And regarding the schedule and the deployment of the electronic health record, we are currently on schedule to deploy the system on May 1st of this year. We've been working hard over the last several months with the vendor with the vendor to get the system up and going. And in a couple of weeks here, we'll begin essentially user acceptance testing of the system, so we'll know a lot more then.
Very good. Assistant Commissioner, you have?
Through the chair, Marion Sweet, Assistant Commissioner. We have about $1.6 million that was encumbered for the EMR system. We have had increases, particularly with the expansion of getting a Pyxis machine, which is a pharmaceutical distribution system that we are going to be adding on to it. So there have been a couple of little additional costs, but overall it has not been what we have seen in other implementations of large IT infrastructure systems. So.
Is just because you mentioned it, is that the first of that kind of machine we've had at API, or is it an additional or a replacement?
The Pyxis machines?
Yes.
It's hard when you can't see. I'm not looking at the video. Yes, we currently run a system made by a company called Meditech. And we've been on that system at API for many, many years. Assistant Commissioner Sweet may know when we started that, but I wouldn't want to guess. It's been quite a while. So we're transitioning from Meditech to this new updated system called Avatar NX, made by a company called NetSmart out of Kansas.
Okay. Well, that's a it's a bunch of interesting terms there. Well, Godspeed, and we hope that the health record system works well. Any other questions? Go ahead, Mr. Cole.
No, I'm sorry. Thank you for your support.
Of course. I think everyone on this committee is a strong supporter of API. And as Senator Giesel mentioned, we've all heard the horror stories from years ago. And frankly, the less we hear in the news about API, the better, so long as we can have confidence that things are going well. With that, is there anything more on this portion of this slide, or can we go on to Children's Services?
Mr. Chair, yes, we can move on to Children's Services. And for the record, Tracy Dompling, Acting Commissioner for the Department. Office of Children's Services has multiple initiatives that are addressing workforce recruitment and retention challenges, resulting in a positive trend in retention. So turnover rates have reduced from 52% in 2023 to 32% in 2025. So that's the turnover associated with retention. So to decrease turnover, OCS has been trying to hire the right staff, train them, connect them with mentors, slowly onboard case assignments, and then at a macro level, conducting wellness assessments in offices, performing critical incident debriefing, and then using reflective supervision with supervisors. So they are making efforts and slowly seeing those turns. Things, of course, we know can fluctuate, but right now, we're pretty happy with the work that's happening there. But I do want to note, although the retention is improving, recruitment still poses challenges. Currently, the division has 99 vacant positions, and we are actively recruiting for those positions. It's a tough job. OCS is also focusing this next year on strengthening their investigations and assessments across the state. They're also launching a permanency focus at the 9 to 10 month mark when children are out of care to improve overall outcomes for children and families. And then I think Director Boy mentioned this earlier, but Alaska does have one of the highest rates of relative placement in the country. So OCS is continuing to utilize extended family instead of foster care where it's appropriate to reach those child permanency goals and to maintain the cultural and familial connectedness.
Can I ask a question before we move on from that? I think I know the answer, but I like to hear this reiterated from the department. ICWA was mentioned earlier. It's a very important federal law. There are some challenges to ICWA. That is to say, there have been challenges at the federal level. But my understanding is that even if ICWA were to be repealed, it would still be the policy of the department to largely follow its recommendations. Is that true?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's accurate.
Okay, very good. Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question, as I know that the focus areas are obviously dealing with internal dynamics, but I have a curiosity about some of the external challenges that may be coming. I know that one of the dynamics of H.R. 1 was to remove foster children, the exemption of those who are aging out of the system from being able to continue to receive Medicaid and SNAP benefits. And I'm curious about what are the department's plans, or how are they going to address those children who may be in a very vulnerable position, as we all know the statistics of how many young folks who do age out of foster care do end up at Covenant House or in other types of services for houseless and homeless youth.
Through the chair to Senator Tobin, I can't speak directly to how deeply we have kind of taken a dive into that as a department. Director Guay, do you have anything additional you want to add on that?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I don't have anything direct in regards to the SNAP benefits or Medicaid, but we do quite a bit of work with young adults who elect to stay in care, and then there's the youth that have moved into adulthood but do not stay in care. We continue to work with that population as well in a variety of ways, and so I don't know if that's helpful, if there's more specifics that you're looking for, if it's just SNAP and Medicaid.
Senator Tillman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We can talk offline, as I think there are some really interesting, innovative things other states like Utah have been implementing so that they can actually ensure folks continue on a progress forward and don't end up needing additional state services. And so I'd love to talk more about what some of our partners here in the West are doing as they also are going to be facing these challenges.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I would love to chat offline about that. That would be fantastic.
Thank you, Director. Senator Klayman has a question.
So I appreciate the information on vacancies and recruiting and retention, but it's still just shy of 1 in 6. And I know that's super challenging. What are some of the steps that have been, I know a lot of the stuff in terms of recruiting and getting folks once hired to keep them, but are our wages competitive? I mean, that's always the first question I raise, because I recognize working OCS is quite challenging for the folks that work there. And are we struggling even in terms of wage competitiveness for those positions?
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, I believe, and Assistant Commissioner Sweet can correct me if I'm off base, at some point there was a classification study that did identify that our wages for the protective services specialists were on par. Yes. So with the nation, kind of what people are receiving for reimbursement, or not reimbursement, sorry, for pay for that work. Now, we have been working, we've been talking a lot with Director Guay and her leadership team about, you know, are there other areas that we can try to incentivize? Because there are areas of the work that are challenging. One of them is being on call. So trying to look at, you know, how can we better support our staff in those types of situations as well. So kind of looking at the big picture of, you know, what are the pressure points and the reasons that staff are leaving, and then how do we help support those staff?
I wouldn't want to follow up. I would just, I guess I would, I don't know when you did the salary study, but I would, with that sort of vacancy, I would have some skepticism, because that's just if I were a private business and I had a 1/6 vacancy factor, I would either be talking about substantially scaling back the business because I never thought I could achieve that, or I'd be changing something to try to fill that vacancy. Because I mean, and I'm not, I don't mean this in a critic, it may sound critical, but I think you all have been trying very hard to fill the gap, but it's just a huge gap, and it was much worse before. And so it's progress, but it's still, it's very difficult. And the turnover rate you're describing suggests that it isn't just salaries and benefits. It's just hard to keep people there. I'm not sure it's a question that calls for an answer, but I'm continuing to be concerned.
Understandable.
Thank you, Senator Klayman. Commissioner, you want to finish with juvenile justice?
Yes, and I'm going to skip over the juvenile facility infrastructure. I think we've talked quite a bit about McLaughlin Youth Center, Fairbanks Youth Facility, and that infrastructure. I will note that there's a focus on improving telehealth infrastructure to support connection with community providers to aid youth as they're coming out of our secure facilities. We have, you know, cloud-based electronic health record. We're looking at upgrades to facility wireless infrastructure within facilities, at utilizing HIPAA-compliant devices, really to look at improved privacy. And so funding for those specific opportunities has been through the federal, I'm going to read this out, Promoting Continuity of Care Following Incarceration grant. That was actually a grant that the Department of Health had pursued, and then the funding for that supports activities both within the Division of Juvenile Justice and the Department of Corrections. DJJ is also focusing on full implementation of juvenile probation service enhancements, such as standardized probation success planning and supervisory case reviews. Also looking at staffing and caseworker flexibility, or casework flexibility to be utilized to improve efficiencies and respond to demographic changes, especially when there's vacancies in rural areas, because we do see that in some of our facilities, or our offices, sorry. Any
questions? Very good.
I have one more thing.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes.
Wonderful.
It's on the last. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in closing today, I did want to highlight and talk about a few takeaways. We feel that the department is moving in the right direction. Across the department, we're seeing real progress with improvements in workforce stability, strengthening our service delivery, and using data and evidence-based practices to guide our decisions. Whether it's improving outcomes for children and families at the Office of Children's Services, strengthening our services at the Division of Juvenile Justice, expanding programs at the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, or improving access to wellness and behavioral health supports at Alaska Pioneer Homes, those are not abstract goals. They are measurable outcomes that directly impacts Alaskans and are addressing the changing needs of our population, some of which we've talked about today. We're intentionally shifting towards early intervention and least restrictive care through coordinated health and complex care unit, expanding community partnerships, and anticipated new licensing and service models. We're working to reduce system bottlenecks, supporting families sooner, and helping individuals receive the right care at the right place at the right time. And lastly, our progress is rooted in people and partnerships. Our workforce shows up every day for some of the most vulnerable Alaskans, often under challenging conditions, and their dedication is the foundation of everything that we do. At the same time, we have collaborations with tribes, communities, state and federal partners, and providers, which is essential to sustaining this momentum. So we know that there's more work ahead. We're not saying that we're perfect, but we're approaching these challenges with innovation, accountability, and a focus on long-term sustainability. I appreciate the opportunity to share this with you today.
Thank you. I don't see any further questions. So thank you to the acting commissioner and the assistant commissioner and everyone that was online. Very much appreciate your presentation today. The next meeting of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee will be Thursday, January 29, 2026. We will have a presentation from the Department of Health on the Rural Health Transformation Program. Thank you, everyone, for a productive hearing. This meeting's adjourned. It is 4:43 p.m.